Welcome to Behind the Headlines, the podcast that goes around the UK to hear some of the stories that our reporters have been covering today. Whether that's a report they've filed from the scene, a chat with them to get the details of the story, or an interview that they've done. I'm Kat Wright, and today we'll be focusing quite heavily on the assisted dying bill, hearing both sides of the argument, including a very powerful interview with a woman who has personal experience of where she feels it could have benefited her family. And there's a bit of discussion around suicide as part of that story, so if that is triggering or upsetting for you, just be warned it is mentioned. Also this evening, England's men's football team has a new coach.
I'm very excited to start this journey in January.
And if you've been across that controversial Conkers story, we've got a bit of an update on that as well. But first, an MP has today introduced a private member's bill to Parliament on assisted dying. If it's passed, the legislation would allow terminally ill adults to end their life with medical help. We have an interview with someone who's backing the bill shortly, but first, setting out the arguments with people she's spoken to on both sides is our reporter, Claire Bode.
The assisted dying debate is a passionate one on both sides. This morning, there were protests outside of Parliament from those both for and against the introduction of assisted dying. Davina Hare is from the campaign group Dignity in Dying and says people should have the right to choose to die if they're in pain.
Current law isn't working, and what happens as a result is that dying people are forced to consider going to Switzerland to try and end their suffering, taking matters into their own hands at home, which is obviously very dangerous, or simply just continuing to suffer. We want dying people to have choice. We want them to have excellent palliative care and the choice of an assisted death if they really need it at the end of their lives.
Some campaigners are worried about the risk of a slippery slope being made by the introduction of assisted dying. I spoke to Nikki Kenward, who is disabled after contracting Guillain-Barre syndrome in 1990. She told me she's worried disabled people could feel pressure to go down the assisted suicide route.
Because it's too dangerous, and because the information coming out about how it's all going to be safe, the safeguards, which don't exist and don't work in any other place. We're pressured now. People say, you know, don't you think you've ruined your husband's life? It's amazing how they see my life. And it's a very small step from, well, should you have a life? You know, you don't need to be here, do you? And now I'm getting older again. You know, my goodness me. So you're old and disabled. It's in the air, it's in the ether.
We've been hearing from countless families about why they think assisted dying is important. Pauline McLeod's husband, Ian, died in June last year, 2 years after being diagnosed with motor neuron disease. She spoke to one of our North Yorkshire reporters, May Norman, about how his life went from being active and adventurous to, in her words, a living hell.
For Ian, life quickly became really intolerable. And I can only describe the last 2 years of his life as a complete nightmare. He couldn't walk, he lost his speech, he had breathing problems, difficulty swallowing, so the eating and drinking was really challenging. He didn't feel he had any quality of life, and he didn't want to live knowing that all he had to look forward to was this steady decline. And he felt really trapped. He wanted it all to stop, and he wanted a way out.
Of course, from what you've described, you know, as Ian before, full of life, yeah. Always off on adventures. So
yeah.
It would have been so awful for him during that time.
Yeah.
And for yourself.
Yeah, so I've been asked many times by people why Ian didn't take up the Dignitas option. Well, Dignitas is actually very good in theory, but the reality is it's not only very expensive, it's actually quite bureaucratic and onerous process, and it's Dignitas don't actually make any domestic arrangements. They don't provide any care at the other end. Ian did in fact explore the option of Dignitas, but by that time he couldn't walk, and of course we're both aware that accompanying someone to Dignitas can be regarded as assisting a suicide, which is currently an offence and carries a risk of prosecution. So Ian didn't want me to face questioning by the police by accompanying him to Dignitas. But in my opinion, even if Ian had been able to get to Dignitas on his own, it's not an acceptable option to have to sort of say wave goodbye to your loved ones and travel alone to die with strangers in a foreign country. which is why I'm so passionately in support of the new Dignity in Dying Bill.
And your thoughts then, having seen sort of Ian go through what he went through, the fact that he did explore Dignitas, what are your thoughts on the bill?
Well, of course, I'm very in support of the bill. Ian was so desperate that in July 2022, he attempted to take his own life. So, you know, I need hardly explain how distressing that was for me. And it was continually frustrating not to be able to provide any hope or comfort to Ian. And then his condition continued to deteriorate for another year before he told me that he wanted to stop eating and drinking and end his life that way, which was a horrendous dilemma, obviously. But I didn't feel I had any option but to support him. So I contacted our MND nurse and she arranged a meeting with our GP and our palliative care team, who deemed that Ian had capacity to make the decision. And fortunately, our local hospice agreed that he could be admitted there, which was really crucially important because it meant that he had sedation and pain relief available. But still, it took nearly 3 weeks for Ian to die that way, so it's hardly a humane way to die. So for me, to those who argue that the present law protects people, I'd ask where the protection was for Ian. And if it was possible to assess Ian's capacity to make the decision to end his life by refusing food and drink, then I would have thought it's possible to assess his capacity to end his life in a planned and humane way.
That was Pauline McLeod talking to our reporter, May Norman. You're listening to Behind the Headlines. Still to come, we're at the scene of a big explosion in Newcastle and we get the reaction to the new England manager. But first, a couple of sad stories to share with you now, I'm afraid. In the first, a 7-year-old boy has died in a massive explosion in Newcastle. If you've seen the pictures online, you'll see that at least one property has been completely destroyed and the ones immediately around it are badly damaged.
This big bang came to the back door and the whole house just shook. I looked out the window. There was a piece of window frame and glass had come flying over the roof from the houses.
That's Margaret, who lives on Violet Close in Benwell, near to where the explosion happened. Our reporter Sophie Green has been at the scene for us since early this morning.
Well, there's a huge cordon in place to keep people away. And when you see the pictures, you can understand why. At least one house has been completely destroyed, with collapsed roofs, and there's piles of rubble and debris scattered across the street. Superintendent Darren Adams is from Northumbria Police, who told us that 6 other people have been taken to hospital and they're working with other emergency services to find out what happened.
These inquiries are still at a very early stage, and in the coming hours and days we will continue to piece together what has happened so we can provide answers to the family as well as the wider community.
Several nearby properties have been evacuated, with people gathering at the Merton Lodge Community Centre, where Christine Williams has been offering support.
Some of the people have totally lost their homes, so we did what we could do. People have brought what they could, water, blankets, and then we've come along and we've been making cups of tea and coffee, you know, just tending to people, keeping them warm and comfortable.
Roads in the area are still closed off and police have issued a no-fly zone around the street as well. Emergency services will also be at the scene for the foreseeable future.
And a local vicar says St James's Church in Benwell Lane will be open for prayers and candles will be lit for the little boy who died. Elsewhere, 5 people have been killed following a head-on collision on a motorway in Cumbria. An investigation into what happened on the M6 is ongoing, and we have just had an update from police. Our reporter Tom Hale has been covering this story all day for us. Tom, what do we know?
Yes, Kat. Emergency services rushed to the 2-vehicle collision, which happened near to T-Bay services yesterday afternoon. Police tell us this evening that it was a head-on collision with a Skoda travelling southbound on the northbound carriageway of the M6. 4 people from Glasgow, including 2 children, were killed in a Toyota. A 3rd child is in hospital with serious injuries. The driver of the Skoda, a 40-year-old man from Cambridgeshire, was pronounced dead at the scene. The road was shut throughout yesterday evening and into this morning.
So what are Cumbria Police saying now?
Well, the force are continuing their appeal for witnesses and tell me that the families of those involved are being supported by specially trained officers. They're also thanking people who have already come forward. Tim Farron, the local MP for the area where it happened, has called it an unthinkable tragedy and is beyond heartbreaking. He says his thoughts and prayers go out to everyone affected.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines. Now, England have a new manager. Can Thomas Tuchel do what so many before him have failed to do and bring home a trophy? And what do fans think of having the third ever foreign manager take charge of the men's side? Our sports reporter Henry Winter was watching the press conference for us earlier.
Wearing a dark coloured suit with an unbuttoned shirt, Tuchel looked very relaxed as he spoke to the world's media at St George's Park this lunchtime.
Once I made a time frame up in my mind from January to the World Cup, I felt already excited and that it suited my passion, and with such a strong record in the last tournaments to push it over the line and to try to put a second star on the shirt.
And that second star could be earned in 18 months' time when England travel to America to compete in the World Cup. He also had this message for fans who would have preferred an English manager.
I'm sorry, I just have a German passport, but I can just tell them, and all of these supporters also felt my passion for the English Premier League, my passion for the country, how I love to live here and how I love to work here.
These people in Weston-super-Mare have been giving us their thoughts on the appointment.
I just don't think he's got the experience in international football.
Thomas Tuchel in. He ain't the best manager there is, so I think they should have kept it with Lee Carsley, to be honest.
Thomas Tuchel, good luck to him. I think he's a good manager. Yeah. The fact that he's German, I think it's a good thing. The only thing is he has his wild moments.
Well, it's the German's first ever international role, but many aspects of the job will be very familiar. He worked in England for nearly 2 years as Chelsea manager, where he won the Champions League. He'll also be reunited with England captain Harry Kane, who he coached at Bayern Munich last season. His assistant at Bayern, Englishman Anthony Barry, will also be by his side when he takes up the role in January. Until then, interim manager Lee Carsley will remain in charge.
And finally, you may have heard all the controversy over the sporting event of last weekend. Well, the latest on that is that it now appears there wasn't any cheating at the World Conquer Championships. Questions had been raised after men's title winner David Jenkins, aka King Conquer, was found to have had a metal replica conquer in his pocket. A final verdict on that is expected in the next 24 hours, but until then, we've got the lowdown from Championship Committee member Charles Whalley.
All the evidence that we've seen so far 100% clears David Jenkins from any wrongdoing. We've seen footage, we've seen stills, we've spoken to all the judges that were there, and nothing, as far as we can tell, untoward happened. I'd like to think that we've been seen to do the right thing. There may be one or two slightly aggrieved, but at the end of the day, hopefully they can see we've taken the allegations pretty seriously, in fact, very seriously.
Is that the equivalent of VAR for Conquer Championships? I don't know. Anyway, there's more on these and other stories on the news pages of our radio station websites, or we're across social media. And don't forget to subscribe or come back here tomorrow for another digest of the day's news on Behind the Headlines.